time by chance. Gavin Steinhobel, attorney at law, is in the house, and that was an interesting, appropriate tune to kick off our Wednesday conversation, because generally speaking, I think it's fair to say that this slot has become synonymous with matters that are trending, and certainly no holds barred conversation around those matters, and today's going to be no different. Nkosi Sikelel' country is for me, because you can imagine, I mean, maybe not the Nkosi Sikelel' part, but there's the South Africans that have taken advantage of Donald Trump's initiative to save the farmer in South Africa from the genocide,
from people calling for it like Malema,
or is it a kind of rather cynical view to say that possibly they are playing directly into the Make America Great, the MAGA playbook of misinformation, because there really and truly are cases of many communities around the globe that are genuinely fleeing in terms of refugee status from situations that are serious. I'm talking about life-threatening.
Well, Dave, it depends how you see these matters. I do think, and I would have full sympathy with a white person who feels that after 30 years of the end of apartheid still being biased against with racist legislation, you get despondent. You go, when are we going to be a non-racial society, firstly? The second thing is that you say it's not life-threatening, but if you look at our murder stats, I mean, we're up there with the Gaza war, you know. So law and order's taken a real knock in this country, and we have crime stats that are outrageous.
In fact, to support that, and I will challenge that in a second, but to support that premise, apparently the civilian casualty list in South Africa eclipses that in the Ukraine by factors
by an order of magnitude,
huge magnitude. Yeah. Now, obviously, you know, that is a question one has to ask. But now, coming back to look at who the victims of that crime are, by far the majority of those victims are not white South Africans.
No, they're not. But I mean, if you are somebody who lives out in the district as a farmer, you're particularly vulnerable, and their stats are quite horrendous. And they're worse than sort of, you know, the stats of, you know, people who live in cities and towns. So, you know, there could be, you know, years of that also wears one down. I'm quite close to the farming community, and I know quite a lot of the guys that farm in the Free State and that. And, you know, it all eventually wears one down. And then you go, well, maybe, just maybe, if somebody offers me an opportunity to have a fresh start in a country that works with law and order, a good economy that's well marshaled, somewhere I can sell my products without all the politics and all the destructive government policies, then I would go, well, guy, you know, that's your prerogative. And we've watched fellow South Africans leave from 94 until now, and I've never ever looked at them and said, well, you know what, you're a coward or you're a traitor to your country, or because at the end of the day, you know, you have to look after yourself and your family and do the best with the one life that you have. And if things aren't working out for you here, then by all means, go try somewhere else. I don't have a problem with that. I think the problem or the reason that it's caused so much dismay politically is because I don't think that, much like many people in the apartheid time, never really spent the privileged classes didn't spend a lot of time thinking about the people who were being prejudiced against. They were just happy that things were going fine and swimmingly for them, and now the shoe's on the other foot. And I think most people like to try and pretend that whites shouldn't complain about the fact that they are being hampered economically by racist laws. And so and this just shines a little spotlight on something that's a bit uncomfortable. That is the fact that our country has not evolved into a non-racial society yet.
The interesting news item that I picked up for this morning's bulletin is the G20 as a group of 20 nations of import, currently headed the G20 by South Africa, is due to hand over the leadership of the group to America, right? That is assuming that
America stays in.
But according to Donald Trump, He's not going to be coming to South Africa to attend the G20 summit in November this year unless the country fixes what he believes is the genocide of white Afrikaners. Now, you know, this has major impact on global politics. Yeah. If America, which is supposedly going to be taking the lead of the G20 nations summit and directing global economic and social and political thought in a certain direction towards hopefully growth and prosperity across the planet, or certainly for the G20 nations, if they're going to abdicate that responsibility based on the fact that South Africa is misbehaving badly, which is not, which it, it, one can Dave, see it that it, way, Dave, but really and truly, Dave, there things, is no Dave, declared things genocide are, of things, white
things
South
are
Africans.
Not right, and we just have become used to it, you know. And you know, white people have continued to prosper despite these things, and everybody goes, well, they seem all right, you know, they seem at the top of their society and more affluent than most. Well, yes, in some way, but that's despite the fact that the legislation is against white people. So, you know, and all I'm saying is that if you're going to take, you know, other countries to the International Criminal Court and you want to be the moral arbiter of the world, then at least get your house in order. And I think a lot of people have looked at that and gone, who the hell does South Africa think they are, when we know that they're, you know, at home things are not right.
But looking at where things are not right, if you think about this, Donald Trump has just accepted or is about to a gift of $400 million worth of aircraft from, well, shall we say, a country that has a very dubious track record of human rights. And he's got business interests there. He's now subsequently engaged in a $142 billion arms deal with Mohammed bin Salman, you know, Saudi's crown prince, who oversaw the murder of a journalist, in full view of the world.
Yeah.
And now is lifting sanctions on Syria, which has also quite an interesting track record based on bin Salman's intervention.
I've got no doubt that there's a lot of maneuvering going on globally with all the change that's happened. And obviously, I'd expect that countries will make pacts with countries that they don't necessarily agree with. And I don't think that the reaction of Americans to South Africa would have been as harsh if we didn't go out in the first place and do everything antithetical to their interests. You know, have these joint military things with Russia, load the Russian ship with arms when we knew that Russia was sanctioned, our relationships with China, and all of Russia's, we've put ourselves from a foreign affairs point of view squarely in the court of the anti-Americans, right? And they said, well, fine, then do that, and then, you know, but don't expect anything nice from us. And so that's exactly what's happened. It would have been quite easy to resolve by just going over there and playing what India does, and they trade with everybody, and nobody has a problem with that. But don't go and politically posture yourself as being anti-American, because if you do that, the Americans are going to say, well, you're not a friend. And if you're not a friend, then you're a foe.
Well, it's very interesting to see that our president is about to embark on that journey very soon.
Yeah, well, that is
yesterday's bulletin.
Yeah, very soon is fine. I mean, there's months that have gone by since they cocked it up, and you'd think that they would have had some sense of urgency to fix it up. You know, how long ago was Rasool kicked out of the U.S.?
Yeah,
you know,
but apparently
it's been several weeks now, and nothing's been done.
Apparently, there was no appetite from America's point of view to engage in dialogue with South Africa under those circumstances.
Well, they don't want to, because we've basically planted our flag.
Yeah,
and they're irritated by it, because, you know, as much as there's an anti-U.S. sentiment in this country amongst the political class, they do forget that the U.S. sanctions was ultimately what ended apartheid. And, you know, they do have the U.S. to thank for that. So, you know, I don't know why we have to be involved in global politics. We're not a player. We're not significant. And all we should do is try and trade with everyone. And, You know, it's a very, it's just a game we shouldn't be playing. But you know, our guys have a you know, this blown up sense of self importance when they're globally insignificant. And the only way to make themselves relevant is by doing these outrageous things. You know,
but it would seem that the business lobby has now at last started to stand up and be counted. And it was interesting that the fund that's been proposed that is going to be raised to support black economic empowerment, to the tune of billions of rand, the government has announced is going to, proudly announced, going to be funded by big business in this country.
Yeah, sure.
Whereas big business has come out almost en masse to say, not on our watch. No,
we know what you're going to do. You're going to steal those billions. And the, you know, there's no doubt about that. And if you have any doubt about that, ask yourself whatever happened after the Zondo Commission where all that money was stolen. Or ask yourself perhaps what happened to all the COVID relief funds that were also stolen. You know, there's just no consequences. And there's nothing going to stop them from stealing that money too.
It's a rather depressing scenario when you look at it that way.
Yes and no.
But I mean, you are very bullish about the future.
Just be realistic about it. Stop enabling these people and let's start thinking about South Africa and not the ANC cadres all the time. Mm. Because they're the only ones who seem to want to eat lately. And, you know, I just think... like an initiative like that is just money wasted. You know, we can do so much better with money. You know, to put it into some sort of fund that's only available to people of a certain skin color and say that that's going to change this country is laughable.
Do you think
you can't fix an economy by handing out cash? You know, you just simply can't. You fix an economy from the bottom up. You enable businesses, and you think about economic growth. And we say this every week. You never hear about that. You know, all you hear about is how we're going to take money from the productive citizens of this country and give it to the unproductive, and that's just not going to help the economy grow at all.
And I see Davi Root coming out very strongly saying, you know, guys, you've got to be very careful now. There is no doubt in his mind that there is a kind of tax boycott happening in South Africa, slowly and surely gaining momentum where people, he says that he is being consulted by, are interested in two things, moving money offshore and secondly,
capital
avoiding
outflow.
Tax. Yeah. Now, he makes the point that in heavily taxed countries around the world, and there are some, that one can immediately think of, New Zealand being one and Australia being another, people don't mind paying tax because they get a hell of a lot of service.
You do.
As a result. In South Africa, he says, people are actively avoiding paying tax because of the rampant theft and corruption.
Well, yeah, the government hasn't shown that they can take care of the money that we pay. You know, and again, as you say, this thing of putting a whole lot of money into a fund to you know, they love these wonderful sounding terms like, you know, to economically uplift and so forth and so forth. Well, it can't work because, you know, you can't hand out packets of cash and then you know, you haven't taught anyone to fish. You know, so and the government's not going to teach you how to fish because they got no idea how to do business. And if you don't believe that, have a look at every SOE that they've tried to manage. You know, and the last people you'll ever take any advice from in business is the politicians, because they're not businessmen. Mm. You know, so it's...
Is there a way out of this, Gavin? I mean, realistically...
There is a way out of this. Give us all a break. Get off our necks. Let us get on with what
we do. But who is going to give us a break?
The government must give us a break.
But they're not going to vote themselves out of power.
You know, we're so over-regulated, you know, when it comes to developing property and you know, just getting permissions and... You know, I mean... Years ago, if you were to lay out a new township, you would, you know, the government would be only too happy to bring services to that land, because in perpetuity they're going to have people paying rates. Now, if you want to develop something, you have to bring the electricity there, you have to reticulate the water to there, and you know, and pay for additional roads that are required to service it, and you know, the government doesn't help you anymore. So, you know, what we need is a benevolent government that's good for business and marshals the economy, and they've never done that, and they've never shown an interest. In fact, they've always been they've always had antipathy towards business because they've always seen it as the capital class, and they're very communist thinking. But it's that class of people that grows the economy. It's that class of people that brings employment. It's that class of people that the people that get that employment can send their children to schools and universities because they're not living on a grant. They're living on a salary and they can be economically upwardly mobile.
How does you one cannot get the stand message in to the
you cannot stand stuff. In that bucket and try and pull yourself up by the handle by handing.
No, sure. Yeah. It all makes total sense, but the majority of South Africans that have the power to change this trajectory seem hell-bent on maintaining the status quo.
I think what always happens, and that is that you always feel a sense of despondency because there's so many people that are wrong-thinking in your mind that you think will never come around. And then you think you've got to change everyone's mind in the next 5 minutes. It's not going to happen. But you do have to have conversations about it.
Yeah.
And people sometimes hear those conversations and go, man, I've been thinking about things the wrong way around. We should think about the economy. We should have been thinking about the economy since 1994, and we would have been very far down the road in terms of having almost no unemployment and having an economy that grows, you know, at 5-6% like other emerging economies do. Now we got, as you said, Davy Ritt saying, well, everybody's saying, well, can you get my money out of here? Well, you know, if you've got capital outflows from a country, you cannot have economic growth. You need capital to be coming in. You need direct foreign investment. You're not going to get direct foreign investment from many of the people that we've fallen into bed with, like Iran, because they don't have the money and they're going down. So, you know, and then we go and alienate countries like America. It just doesn't make any sense. It's a bit of a circus. So, yes, can you change everyone's minds? I doubt it. Is everybody getting to a point where they know inwardly that we need change? Yes, everybody, right across our society. And it's those people who are going to be susceptible to better ideas. But those ideas need to be aired and spoken about and discussed. And so, you know, if we can get people to think in a more positive way, not what can we take from people who have more than us, but how can we grow the pie so we all have a slice, well, then that's a whole different way of thinking.
And I think it's fair to say, and you've said it frequently on the show, that there is a growing sense, and you are definitely feeling more optimistic than you have been for a while, which is encouraging because I too am beginning to understand that there is the winds of change are beginning to blow.
I think people are we've all had that friend or that person that we know who's a bit of a pathological liar, and eventually nobody believes a word they say. If they said the fish was so big, you know, it was half that size, and so forth and so forth. And I think what's happened with the ANC is, their pathology of corruption and lying and to the public is caught up with them, and people just don't believe a word they say anymore. And, you know, when you get that kind of fatigue, people look for alternatives. And we've seen the decline of the party's fortunes in the general elections and in the municipal elections now. And, you know, ultimately there's room for change. The options are sometimes horrifying, but I think by and large people are going, well, you know, something has to change. Something will change. Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. You know, we all knew in the late 80s something had to change, and then it did.
And on that note, we take a sabbatical until next week when we get together again.
Yeah, Gavin looking Steinhobel. Forward to it, Dave. Yeah, well, let's try and be positive.
I love that. Let us be positive for the week ahead, and Gavin will be back in a week's time. If you're looking for a good attorney, you'll find Kloppers Inc. down in the Belito Village and Gavin Steinhobel at your service. Gavin, until next week.
Yeah, looking forward to it. Thanks, Dave.
Here's Katie.